Peter B. Collins. News and comment for you on Friday, June 8th. Corporate spending in America's political campaigns after Citizens United is spinning out of control. And here at PeterBCollins.com, we're bringing you an exclusive series of podcast interviews related to efforts to overturn the Citizens United decision. Carl Mayer is the attorney we've been talking with, along with activist Adam Fergatch. And in today's in-depth interview, which is available to all, not just subscribers, it's free at PeterBCollins.com, Carl Mayer really nails it. He explains that we need to press Governor Brian Schweitzer and the Attorney General in Montana to embrace a simple one-page motion that calls on the Supreme Court to acknowledge that it does not have jurisdiction over the appeal from Montana of its state laws banning corporate contributions in political campaigns. It's not a new law that followed Citizens United. It's been on the books from a voter initiative in 1912. Here's an excerpt from that interview. Carl Mayer, the attorney.
Let me quote from the governor of Montana. And you very rarely hear a governor speak in these terms. Okay? This is what Governor Schweitzer said about this whole issue. He said, quote, "This business of allowing corporations to bribe their way into government has got to stop." And he continued on. This is an interview he gave last year with the local radio station. He continued on and said, "This is our government, and we are not going to allow any corporation to steal it from us," end quote. See, now, people are not used to in this country hearing governors talk like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're trying to do is get Governor Schweitzer to put actions behind his word. And in a certain sense, he has, because he's called for a referendum on this issue, and they have put in a brief on this case. But we're asking them to take an additional, stronger step of asserting the sovereign rights of Montana should not be violated by the Supreme Court taking the petition and telling Montana how to run its own election, and telling Montana that their Supreme Court can't issue a ruling which says corporate money stays out of politics, and this is the will of our people, and there's no business of a federal court undermining a sovereign interest this way. Essentially, if I could put it metaphorically, Peter, Governor Schweitzer has said that he wants to light a prairie fire on this issue. You know, he's hearkening back to the populist days of the 19th century. He wants the issue of getting corporate money out of politics to spread like a prairie fire all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a little frustrated, however, because we feel that we're giving the governor the match, the kerosene, the kindling wood, and he's all ready to start the prairie fire, but for some reason he won't light the match. And all he's got to do is sign a one-page motion that will say to the Supreme Court, hands off the Montana Supreme Court and our election laws, which state that corporate money can't be used in politics.
Be sure to listen to the full interview. It's free at PeterBCollins.com and in the show file for this podcast and for that podcast. The phone numbers for Governor Schweitzer and the Attorney General are right there. And even if you listen on the weekend, I encourage you to place a call. They've got voicemail there. Let them know that you want the Governor and the Attorney General to support the motion that the Supreme Court has no jurisdiction over the appeal from Montana. And there are other people working on this issue as well, and I want to say that we need to use every available means. The Carl Mayer legal gambit is admittedly interesting, but it's a long shot. Will the Supreme Court, if forced to choose between violating the 11th Amendment and upholding the Roberts-engineered Citizens United case, will they do the right thing? I don't think we can count on that. And folks from Common Cause to Public Citizen to Dr. Rick Stagenborg in Oregon are working hard to amend the Constitution. There is movetoamend.org. Go ahead and visit that site. and also Barbara Holzer in the communications department at Public Citizen alerts me that Hawaii, New Mexico, Vermont, Maryland, and Rhode Island have already passed resolutions supporting a constitutional amendment to essentially negate Citizens United by punching a hole in so-called corporate personhood. And that's something that Carl Mayer explores in our conversation in the in-depth interview today. Other states are in play. For example, California's State Senate Judiciary Committee will vote next week on a possible passage of a resolution in support of a constitutional amendment. In Massachusetts, the coalition there reports a resolution is on the verge of a floor vote, following the example of more than 60 town hall resolutions that have been passed in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the Bay State. In New York, the resolution is going through committees this week. The State Assembly has approved the measure. In New Jersey, activists are lobbying for the resolutions with committee chairs. Connecticut, 104 out of 187 legislators have signed on to a letter calling for this amendment. And in North Carolina, yep, a well-organized coalition is lobbying at the state capitol. They've succeeded in passing many local resolutions so far this year. Meanwhile, the focus of all of this activity is the United States Supreme Court. And it's no surprise that a poll shows that the approval ratings of court, the court itself have reached a 25-year low. Only 44% of Americans say that they approve of the way that the justices decide their cases. And 76%, when asked, believe that sometimes the justices let personal or political views influence their decisions. 76% of people believe that. And this is the court where people have lifetime appointments, so they're supposed to be above politics. I think they're beyond it, but not above it. Here's the other question that's critical. From what you know of the current United States Supreme Court, how do you think they'll rule on the health care law? Not whether they'll validate it or invalidate it, but mainly based on personal or political views, 55% agree with that answer. Only 32% said they thought they would rule on Obamacare on legal analysis basis. So it's a very interesting period of time. And I am hopeful that Carl Mayer's novel approach of forcing the justices to either eat Citizens United or eat the 11th Amendment and the states' rights that they have supported so many times in the past, well, that's going to be a very interesting outcome. And June 14th is the day when the court could first announce what it plans to do with the Montana appeal. Meanwhile, get the leakers is the mantra in Washington, D.C. We touched on this yesterday. Dianne Feinstein, senator from California, coasting to re-election, one of the most conservative Democrats in Washington, in my opinion, particularly on the Constitution when it conflicts with the expanding national security state. And Feinstein is joining many Republicans, calling for a crackdown on the leakers. And we have President Obama saying today, he didn't leak it. It didn't come from the White House, but that's very hard to believe. And will Feinstein and other Democrats like Carl Levin of Michigan actually follow through with an investigation into leaks if the investigation leads to the White House or other members of the Obama administration? And once again, the hoo-ha over the leaks is so insulting to me, because they're not talking about the crimes revealed by these leaks. The crimes of a president who selects individuals for assassination. The crime of an administration that engages in cyber warfare. And Congress does nothing. I think Congress has jurisdiction over every kind of warfare, including internet warfare. Leon Panetta, former CIA chief, now defense secretary, making the rounds in the war zone. And he is smacking Pakistan for for its claims of sovereignty, for its feeble efforts to stop the American drone attacks that kill innocent civilians along with targeted individuals. And Panetta, I think, is wading into some really dangerous waters. Because I am no apologist for Pakistan. It's a government that is essentially military-ruled. It's a military dictatorship with the veneer of democratic participation. It's a nuclear power that created the Taliban and now uses money that's given to it by the United States to prop up the Pakistani Taliban, and it has influence over the Afghan Taliban as well. And it's a very murky picture. If I were Pakistan, I'd be deeply incensed that the United States launched the attack on Abbottabad without telling the Pakistanis. And Panetta, who's known for his sense of humor, made a joke about that. And he seems to think that it's amusing to say, well, that was the idea, not telling the Pakistanis. Well, because they couldn't be trusted. I understand that. But when the United States arrogantly blows past the sovereign independence of a country like Pakistan and just says, at will, we can enter your country, we can violate your airspace, we can land commandos, and we can kill people in your country. And yeah, we'll tell you about it afterward. Just imagine if Canada or Russia or anybody else did that to the United States. And Panetta also is facing another deadly attack in Afghanistan, an airstrike that killed 18 women and children. The airstrikes continue, the night raids continue, and puppets like Karzai pop up and say, oh, stop doing it. But he has no credibility with his own people, even less credibility with our leaders, much less the American people. Another grisly landmark, suicides among America's troops continue to increase. In the first 155 days of this year, 154 soldiers killed themselves. Yeah, that's one a day. And this is an increase of 50% over those who were killed in action in Afghanistan. That's right. More American soldiers are killing themselves than are being killed in the war zone, and some of the Americans killed in the war zone are being killed by Afghans, who are supposed to be our allies. The 2012 active duty suicide total of 154 through June 3rd compares with 130 in the same period last year. That's an 18% increase. Meanwhile, Gareth Porter, a frequent contributor to this program and a valuable independent media voice on issues related to Iran, he publishes another big story. In 2005, there was a deal on the table. France and Germany were negotiating with Iran on an Iranian proposal to convert all of its enriched uranium to fuel rods, which could not be used in a nuclear weapon. But at the insistence of the United States and the Bush administration, Britain vetoed that deal. This surfaces from Syed Hossein Mousavian. He led Iran's nuclear negotiating team in 2004-2005 until he was declared an enemy of the state. Now lives in the United States, published a memoir. He's teaching at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School. And what Porter reports is that the British and U.S. refusal to pursue the Iranian offer, which might have headed off the political diplomatic crisis over the Iranian nuclear program in the ensuing years, is confirmed as well by a British diplomat who participated in the talks. They were ready to compromise, but the United States was the obstacle. Yeah, Dick Cheney wanted a war with Iran. He wanted to attack Iran. He wouldn't allow any kind of a deal like that, which would take the threat of an Iranian nuclear weapon not off the table, but wipe it off the map. One of those loaded phrases they love to use in the Middle East. Iran would have resumed uranium conversion at the Isfahan plant, but would have exported its product to an agreed-upon country in exchange for yellow cake. So they were setting up a program where Iran would own its nuclear materials, but they would be subject to short-term inspection by the IAEA, and the conversion to fuel rods made very clear that enriched uranium could not be used for a weapon. Well, we've seen a lot of protests in the streets of Athens as the Greeks grapple with austerity. And in a widely publicized television fight that ought to be shown on the WWF in this country, a couple of members of parliament broke up their discussion and started a fight. And the picture we see is of a male member of parliament hitting Liana Kanelli, who is a Communist Party candidate. So things are really coming to person-to-person conflict in Greece these days. And I hope you'll continue to watch the situation in Greece, because I think it's the model that will be applied to the United States, particularly if Republicans win this fall. And finally today, this is a sordid story. You remember John Ensign, senator from Nevada? He's one of those people who is more religious and more righteous than the rest of us. He was part of the group that had a special house near Capitol Hill, where the right-wing religious zealots who happened to be members of Congress would gather. It's called the family. Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma is a member of the family, lived in that house in Washington, and he actually ran interference for John Ensign, who got caught having an affair with a female staffer. And as you may know, the affair also affected the husband of that woman on his staff. His name is Doug Hampton. Hampton was described as John Ensign's best friend and top political advisor. But Ensign was sneaking around, screwing this guy's wife, Cynthia. And when it was discovered, Tom Coburn was the guy who tried to negotiate the hush money to the Hamptons. Now, nobody's a hero in this film noir. First, the Hamptons said, well, give us $8 million and we'll be quiet. Ensign got his parents to cough up $96,000 that was given to the Hampton family to buy their silence. Can you ever imagine getting your parents to pay off hush money over an affair that you had? I mean, I just think that is frickin' bizarre. So, if you know the rest of this story, this played out. John Ensign resigned from the United States Senate just a few days before he was supposed to face the Senate Ethics Committee. John Ensign has returned to Nevada, where he is working as a veterinarian. No charges have been filed. There are no sanctions, no penalties whatsoever to the senator who violated his family values pledge to Republican voters, but also broke the law, both in paying the hush money and in covering it up. No penalty for Ensign. He walks. No penalty for the staffer, Cynthia, who either aided and abetted the affair or simply submitted to it. But yeah, the husband, who was played for a fool, has pled guilty to charges of illegal lobbying. And he appears to be guilty. But who set him up as a lobbyist illegally after he was forced out of his Senate job? It was John Ensign. John Ensign violated the one-year rule that says if you leave the Senate staff, you have to wait a year before you can lobby. He fired Hampton. Then he set him up as a lobbyist, and he went and got him clients. And it's really disgusting to see the lack of accountability in Washington from the same people who talk so much about imposing their alleged morality on the rest of us. Senator Vitter, can you hear me? Thanks for joining me. Spread this free podcast far and wide, and let's fight against Citizens United. It's time to overturn it.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until